This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
100 days. That's how long Trump's been in office. We'll talk a little bit about that. Mainly, we're going to focus on the media. We're going to talk about that Canadian election. Should we care? Does it matter? All that, so much more coming up tonight on I'm Right. All right, we are celebrating the 100 days of Trump being in office. Now, we're celebrating for a lot of different reasons. One, the border is secure. Two, we don't have President Kamala Harris. And maybe you are tempted, understandably, to point out all the things we haven't gotten done, because it's a bunch of things we haven't gotten done. We haven't seen any real spending cuts. I know there have been some great Doge headlines, but we haven't seen any clawback in spending. Nothing significant. I know we haven't seen mass deportation yet. I get it. But be happy. We're going to get to the Canadian election here. It's going to be in a little while, but think about this. They just went from a far lefty to someone else who's probably even further to the left, meaning they just got rid of their Joe Biden. And there, Kamala Harris just won the election. That could have been us. 4 years of Joe Biden's evil. I doubt you love everything Trump's done. I doubt you hate everything Trump's done, unless you're deranged in one direction or the other. But this could be 100 days of Kamala Harris tearing this country apart as fast as she could. I'll take this 100 days. Now, let's focus on something else, because part of the story out there today is Trump's falling poll numbers, his approval ratings. And don't do what you're tempted to do, what I'm tempted to do. It's just the polls lie. Stop with that. Are there polls out there that lie? Of course. There are polls paid for by the opposition, designed to lie. Yes, that's a really big thing. When you have several different polls from different sources all saying the same thing, they're not lying. It's an accurate reflection of the mood of the country. I see it in my own personal life, people with concerns about the tariffs, concerns about this, concerns about that. And that, of course, brings us to the American media. It's not going to be about Trump. We're not going to talk about Trump for an hour. Let's talk about the American media. Media Research Center looked into it. 92% of the mainstream media coverage of Donald Trump has been negative. Now, that's going to lead us perfectly into the whole 60 Minutes thing, but I want to remind you of why this happens in the country and how disastrous this is for the country. Corporate journalists, the media, think of the media as an institution, because it is an institution, a critically important institution. Think of it like it's a big skyscraper, right? And these people, first they go into journalism school, most of them. And in journalism school, they are, you know, taught these stupid phrases like speak truth to power and things like that. And that's step one. That's getting people to buy in. Young, idealistic people, maybe they want to do the right thing. That's getting them to buy in. Hey, you want to do the right thing, right? Speak truth to power. Oh, yeah, sign me up. Once they get the buy-in, then they give them the other part of this. Well, you know, Democrats and what they want, that's good. Republicans and what they want is evil. So, I mean, yes, you need to be a journalist, but remember, if you're really trying to do some good, you want to do some good, right? You said you wanted to do some good, you'll cover for Democrats and you'll attack Republicans. That's how they think. It's not that they think they're even on the left, lots of these people. They simply have had it ingrained in them that protecting Democrats is what they're supposed to do. Attacking Republicans, those evil Republicans, is what they're supposed to do. CBS, 60 Minutes. You do remember the scandal, right? Now, let's just, for a quick moment, recap that scandal and how insane this whole thing is. 60 Minutes has been on the air for longer, I believe, than I have been alive. I think it's like the 60s or 70s it's been around. I'm 43 years old. As a child, I remember we had this TV in the living room. One of the ones with the wooden kind of frame around it. I know it was that old. I know I'm old. And to change the channel, it had like this knob that would click, 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 channel 1, 2, 3, 4. That's what it did. The knob would click. That's how old the TV was. And I remember as a small child seeing that 60-minute stopwatch thing, because my parents would sit down and watch it on occasion at night. That's how old 60 Minutes is. That's how established it is. But over the years, communists took it over like they do any revered institution, you see. And during the presidential election, these people, people who they think of themselves as not just journalists, the height of journalism. If you ask people who work on 60 Minutes, they would consider it the top of journalism. Kamala Harris sat down for an interview and looked so terrible, did so terribly, couldn't answer anything. You remember what a moron she was. That 60 Minutes actually spliced up the interview in different ways, cutting it, let's remove that, put this here, to try to ensure that she looked better than she actually did. And keep in mind, this isn't some nameless, faceless person. A person, most likely more than one, sat down with videotape and said, oh, cut that out, she looked bad there. Hey, take that answer from there and put it over there. And that person thought they were the good guy while they were doing it. That's how sick these people are. That's how they think. And now their executive producer got bounced because CBS is in the middle of a huge lawsuit with Donald Trump. Trump is suing them for the lies they told. Here's what the CBS anchors think about it.
In tonight's Last Minute, a note on Bill Owens, who until this past week was executive producer of 60 Minutes. Bill resigned Tuesday. It was hard on him and hard on us, but he did it for us and you. Stories we pursued for 57 years are often controversial. Lately, the Israel-Gaza war and the Trump administration. Bill made sure they were accurate and fair. He was tough that way. But our parent company, Paramount, is trying to complete a merger. The Trump administration must approve it. Paramount began to supervise our content in new ways. None of our stories has been blocked, but Bill felt he lost the independence that honest journalism requires. No one here is happy about it, but in resigning, Bill proved one thing. He was the right person to lead 60 Minutes all along.
That communist took his position at 60 Minutes and tried to make sure the Democrat won the election, and that's his send-off. Now, these people, the American media, they lied to us for 4 years. It's not a scandal I'm going to let go of, the fact that we had a non-functional American president for 4 years. For 4 years, the American media covered for the fact that the American president was not a functional adult. 4 years, they made believe.
Making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
The beer brewed here, it is used to make the brew beer in this final. Oh, Earth Rider, thanks for the Great Lake.
And I had a nurse named Pearl Nelson, military. She'd come in and do things that I don't think you learn in medical school, nursing school. She'd whisper in my ear. I couldn't understand him. She'd whisper, she'd lean down. She'd actually breathe on me to make sure that there was a connection, a human connection.
End of quote.
Repeat the line.
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was in the foothills of the Himalayas with Xi Jinping.
They didn't see. That's what they're trying to tell us now. They didn't see. Or it wasn't their fault, you see, that they were being lied to. It's not their fault.
President Biden's decline and its cover-up by the people around him is a reminder that every White House, regardless of party, is capable of deception. But being truth-tellers also means telling the truth about ourselves. We, myself included, missed a lot of this story. And some people trust us less because of it. We bear some responsibility for faith in the media being at such lows.
I think the reporters covering this White House were too willing to take the Biden team's word for it.
This is not a media failure. This is a failure of the Democratic Party. And I just sort of the virtue signaling that some people have done to try to say that the media missed this story. They didn't miss this story. The people at fault are Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Jill Biden, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, every elected member of Congress.
Yeah, what they're doing here, it's important you don't let them get away with it, you see. This is actually the whole point of our talk. It's really important you don't let the media get away with what they're trying to do. Because here's the reality, and the media knows this is the reality. They didn't miss the story. That's the fallback position. That's what they want you to believe. They didn't miss the story. They were well aware of Joe Biden's decline, but because they view their role as being the protectorate of Democrats, they covered up for it. They didn't miss anything. They actively covered it up. And now, well, they study all the poll numbers too, public opinion polls too. Now they see public trust in the media, which was already low, is virtually non-existent now. I'm talking about the corporate media, the CBSs of the world. The public doesn't watch anymore. The only demographic that even watches those kind of channels anymore, very, very old and dying off. Not being mean, it just is. That their audience is getting smaller and smaller as the public trust is gone, completely gone. The media now, what they're doing, they're trying to cover for themselves. Only they understand they can't cover it up completely. So instead of saying, hey, we were complicit in a cover-up, we're the reason America didn't know he had dementia before he even got elected, sorry about that. Instead, what they're trying to do is sell you on, you know, it's not quite as bad as you think it is. So the fallback position is, well, hey, look, the White House lied. And I mean, we screwed up. We shouldn't have believed the White House. They definitely lied, but it was their fault. And I guess we were too trusting. We're such good people that we were trusting. And no. You knew. You mean to tell me that you, I knew about Joe Biden's cognitive decline because I have eyes and ears. You knew. You mean to tell me you and I knew? And the people who live, work, and worship within a mile of Joe Biden for 4 years, it went right by them? Of course not. They knew. They covered it up. And I don't know how we fix where we are as a country, but this is a very, very difficult place to be when the American media has picked a side and they're activists for that side. Tough to wade through it. We'll figure it out. All right? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. I know you'll be able to figure it out because you've been taking your male vitality stack from Chalk, right? Or your female vitality stack? Your mind's working great, right? You feel energized, focused, ready to go at work all the time? That's how I feel. Every single morning I wake up, I eat my eggs, I drink this disgusting superfood smoothie that Ob makes me, and I take my male vitality stack. I'm ready to go. My blood work is outstanding, firing on all cylinders at all times. You want a 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days? CHOQ.com. With the subscription, you get a 17.76% discount. So go get one. We'll be back. Well, we love to bash on the media, don't we? It's fun to talk about all the dirty communists in the American media, and we should be exposing them because the media does matter. But what do you do when they wear judges' robes, FBI badges, a general's uniform? Well, that puts you in quite a pickle as a country, and that is where we remain. These problems didn't magically disappear because we voted Donald Trump back into office in November. Joining me now, former FBI special agent, gosh, that's still cool to say, and co-host of the American Radicals podcast, my friend Steve Friend. Okay, Steve, let's start with the judges. Got a couple judges in handcuffs. I say that's a good start. I know you probably echo that. What do you make of all this?
Well, yes, I do echo that sentiment 100%. But I think it is just the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg here. This is responsive, and I think if anything, it shows that the FBI can be incredibly nimble in bringing prosecutions forward, bringing forward arrests. I mean, at this point in 2021, there were over 400 January 6 subjects in custody. The FBI went all in on getting them into custody, getting them into handcuffs, getting them into detention, and then they thought, we'll build the cases afterwards. And now we've been assured over the last couple of weeks and couple of months that some of these things take time. Well, now we have a proof of concept. We have evidence here that when, in fact, there is a demand from the people and there's pressure placed on the Pambanis of the world and the Cash Patels of the world, that they can react and they can put some of these vile, vicious Marxist communists into handcuffs.
Yeah, see, that's the problem, Steve, is they don't seem to think arrests are coming. At least this John Sullivan doesn't. He's running for Congress. And he's not hiding from the evil things he did while employed at the FBI. As part of his fruity congressional video, he's bragging about it. Here he is.
We're up against some serious threats right now. From skyrocketing costs to Trump and billionaires corrupting our government. And I can't just sit on the sidelines and watch. Because for 17 years, I was an FBI intelligence analyst. Working in secret to keep us safe from global threats and the insurrectionists who stormed our Capitol. But now that the threat is coming from inside the White House, I had to leave the FBI and step forward so I can finally tell you who I am. Hi, I'm John. No, I can say that now. I'm John Sullivan. I'm a dad, a husband, a public servant, and a cancer survivor. And I'm running for Congress. For years, I fought for you in secret. And now, I want to keep fighting for you in Congress. I'm John Sullivan.
Classified.
It's not classified. John Sullivan for Congress. Join me.
Steve, I've been warning people that Linda Fagan at the Coast Guard was not a one-off, that there are Fagans everywhere in this government. They're all over the FBI. You're looking at a Fagan right there. It's obvious. And now I'm supposed to go to sleep at night knowing that that Fagan was in the FBI's intelligence division for 17 years?
17 years. That's almost a full government career, which means he came in right around the time that Barack Obama took office, which sort of checks very nicely with the fact that we completely remade our entire federal workforce there. Here's a guy who pulled the mask completely off. He was a communist the entire time that he was there. And look, the intelligence cadre within the FBI leans far to the left. And these are people who are paid professionally to write term papers that, in effect, are laundered through the FBI and drive its mission forward. And if that guy is there, and I guarantee you he's surrounded by fellow travelers intellectually, they push the agency itself further and further to the left, which is how you've gotten a FACE Act application during the Joe Biden administration of over 90% against pro-lifers. And it was used more than at any other time in its 30-year history. And Joe Biden was only president for 4 years. These people are legion within the FBI, and they feel very confident right now about coming out and announcing what they've done. They are not apologetic, and there needs to be a reaction in quickly.
Steve, why are they so confident? That's part of what I don't get. I know we have new leadership at the FBI, but the FBI agents who do these things, I mean, we had to let go of that guy in New York because he was just publicly bragging about, nah, I'm not going to do that. Why are they so confident?
Look, if there's anything that I know about federal workers is that they will lick their fingers and put it in the air to see where the winds are going, because wherever the momentum is, that is where they were following. You're talking about James Dennehy in New York City, who was issued a directive to hand over the Epstein list to the Attorney General and to the FBI Director and refused to do it. And when he was forced to retire and collect his pension, mind you, he was walked out with a color guard formation and a bagpipe ceremony to the standing ovation of hundreds of employees. There is no fear here because I think the approach that's gone in is a mistake. Look, we're going in and trying to win hearts and minds rather than using shock and awe. And you're a veteran, Jesse. Look, you know that speed, surprise, and violence of actions are your assets when it comes into a hostile takeover. Instead, what we're getting is the slow walkout, the slow roll, and as a result, the momentum, the opportunity to really get the groundswell going and get those federal workers on your side. It just hasn't happened. And as a result, we've seen the James Dennehys, we've seen the Brian Driscolls who refused to hand over the January 6th list to the Attorney General, and we've seen the Stephen Jensens, who was the J6 warlord by his own telling, who who actually drafted and planned the way that the FBI responded and investigated January 6 cases, being promoted to the assistant director in charge of the Washington field office, because I think that the snakes that work at the Hoover building, on the 7th floor particularly, they are professionals at wrapping themselves and coiling themselves around new leadership in the form of Dan Bongino and Kash Patel, and they are just whispering sweet nothings in their ears and delaying them and getting them bubble wrapped in a place where they're not able to actually bring about the quick arrests and the policy changes that the American people expected when we issued the mandate in November of last year.
So you're worried these changes are not coming for the FBI. Instead of patiently waiting, you'd think that these changes aren't coming at all.
I am. I'm incredibly concerned because, look, I am a firm believer that if you're going to bring a lawful and proper prosecution forward, that does take time. But you can make a little bit of a down payment on that escrow. You can hand over a name or two off the Epstein list. You can open up the books on the Butler, Pennsylvania assassination attempt. You can actually bring forward policy changes that are within the purview of the director and the deputy director that they can make changes immediately. They could take away the FBI's quota system, which I've been railing about now for 2.5 years, but that's still in existence. You can actually use the Navy versus Egan Supreme Court decision, which was used to remove me and remove all of the FBI whistleblowers from duty because they suspended our security clearance. That was the workaround for whistleblower protection. They could have said what's good for the goose is good for the gander, embrace the fight that we're actually in, and use that very same tool to go after the Sullivans of the world, the communists who have infiltrated the FBI or federal law enforcement apparatus, and remove them from duty. And that just hasn't been done.
Steve, Caroline Leavitt was asked about the Epstein list. Here was her answer.
My question is about the Epstein files. Do you have any updates from the DOJ or the FBI on when those files are expected to be released, and also when we might start seeing some arrests of the client list?
Sure. I can assure you that the Attorney General and her team at the Department of Justice are working on this diligently. For a specific timeline, I'd have to check in with them, and we can certainly do that for you, Rogan, in the effort of transparency. But I will tell you, the Attorney General is a bulldog. She is someone you want on your team. And when she wants to get something done, she gets it done. I've seen her do it in various instances already in her time as Attorney General. And when she makes a promise, she keeps it.
Okay, Steve, that sounds good.
It does sound good, but I think that they've sort of painted themselves into a corner here. Look, let's just be real about this. Knowing who was on that list would not change your life, would not change my life, would not change really anybody in your audience's life, I guess, unless Bill Gates happens to be part of your audience here. But knowing that the FBI and the DOJ had stood up, say, a task force that mirrored what we saw with January 6th and was actually going after these people, and they said, look, we want to bring a very buttoned-up prosecution. We're looking at 200, 250, 300 potential subjects. These things take time, and that is what the FBI does. Long-term, complex investigations, they would get that grace from the American people. But instead, they went for the splash, and they said, we're promising you this list, and they failed to deliver. And as a result, people are growing impatient, and the workforce over at the FBI saw a little bit of a stumble. They failed to take the beaches at Normandy, and if you don't take the beach on that initial amphibious assault, the speed, surprise, violence of action that is necessary to win this war, to win the FBI and the DOJ back, cannot happen. You can't work your way into the hedgerows until you take the beach, and this stumble that they had with the Epstein list was that initial beach landing, and it just didn't take.
Dang it. Steve, appreciate you as always, brother. Come back anytime. All right, what happened in Canada? Why should I care? Not quit. We'll talk to Mark Morano about that in a moment. Let me talk to you about the reason your feet hurt and your back hurts and your knees hurt and it's your shoes. I never put any stock in my shoes. I used to own one pair. I'm a one or two pair of shoes guy. But then I've had people tell me, man, those shoes, they're killing you. They're killing you. And making a change to G-Defy was a big deal. Gravity Defier, you see, their shoes, they have this special technology in them. And what it does, I won't bore you with all the nerdy details on it, it takes the pressure off your knees, off your back, off your hips, off your feet. The shoe absorbs it instead of your body. You will feel light years better at the end of the day, especially if you walk a lot, stand a lot. It's a no-brainer. You want a good deal? Text Jesse to 9188. You have to text the word Jesse to 9188. That gets you 30% off anything $120 or more. Go get some. You'll thank me for it. We'll be back.
We are over the shock of the American betrayal, but we should never forget the lessons. As I've been warning for months, America wants our land, our resources, our water, our country. Never. But these are not idle threats. President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us. That will never, ever happen.
Well, I don't have high hopes for my Canadian friends, but I guess we'll ask Mark about it. Joining me now, Mark Morano, executive editor at ClimateDepot.com. Hey, Mark, I'm not that well-versed in Canadian politics. I know Trudeau got forced out, and he got replaced by this guy. Did they improve, or did it somehow get worse?
Well, it's absolutely worse, Jesse. This is a situation where, very simply, Justin Trudeau was a puppet pulled by the strings of the World Economic Forum. Mark Carney is the puppet master. He's the one who pulls the strings. This is the guy who's a former head of the Bank of England, the Bank of Canada. He's a World Economic Forum advisor. This is a man who's at the foundation of the carbon neutral banking, of ESG, of net zero. This is a man who not only knows where the bodies are buried, Mark Carney, but he helped bury the bodies. So this is orders of magnitude much more significant and worse for Canada than anything named Justin Trudeau.
Okay, speaking of the climate nutter stuff, here he was, for anyone who doubts what Mark just said.
Skepticism about ESG labels or sustainable labels, and that again is one of the reasons we're having this ruthless, relentless focus on net zero, because in the end, look, we can't stabilize the climate unless we get to net zero, and it's a simple, these are hard numbers. Your emissions right. are either A or B, they're going up or down, and if they're going down, are they going down consistent with the science? We anchor it in the science, the same science the UN and others use for the 1.5-degree objectives.
Mark, how much of Canada's economy is banking on oil and gas?
Canada's economy needs oil and gas to survive. It is predominantly that, no matter how much they talk about solar and wind. You hear the way he said stabilize the climate? First of all, even if you believe that for a second, anything Canada does, as John Kerry said about the United States, we could zero our emissions out to nothing today, and it would have no impact on global CO2 levels, let alone the climate. So Canada is in it for the worst. And I hate to say this, the whole problem with Mark Carney is that Donald Trump's tariff war came at a horrible time. This is not Donald Trump's fault per se, but it was bad timing because it literally, and I've talked to many Canadians, I speak up in Canada about once every 2 years as I go up to particularly Western Canada in Calgary. But Donald Trump has allowed Canadian nationalism to rise, and Mark Carney has ridden that. Now, Pierre Poilievre was set probably to win this election before all of this came in with tariffs and Canadian nationalism. And so this is an unfortunate situation. Canada is going to be hammered. This is a competent bureaucrat manager who knows what he's doing. He's not going to be taking the marching orders. He's the one that gives the marching orders, and he's got his own little country called Canada to experiment with now, and he's going to further gut Canada. I mean, the numbers have just been horrendous, the shrinking of the middle class in Canada. It's kind of like a microcosm of what's happened in California, except on the nation level of Canada.
Gosh, that's so friggin' sad. All right, I want to shift focus to the World Economic Forum. You just mentioned it earlier. You and I have had a discussion about this evil group many times before, but specifically Klaus Schwab, this Bond movie villain right here.
What we are very proud of now is a young generation like Prime Minister Trudeau, President of Argentina and so on, so that we penetrate the cabinets.
Mark, he's got himself in a little bit of hot water for misappropriating funds or whatever they're accusing him of. Not that I would be shocked about that. What do you make of this whole thing?
It's the most bizarre story to ever come. Klaus Schwab, the founder and chairman of the World Economic Club, since its inception in the early 1970s, is being accused of lavish spending, in-room massages, unbelievable hotel stays, private jets, first-class travel. And this is a scandal. And this is what allegedly a whistleblower said. This is going on behind the scenes of the World Economic Forum. My first thought, Jesse, is that's been going in front of the scenes at the World Economic Forum for decades. Every Davos meeting has been private jets, yachts, Hollywood celebrities, billionaire class, corporations, all living it up, Wagyu beef, the most exquisite food, exquisite travel. And somehow we're shocked that this was happening behind the scenes. And we're told, well, he was using company funds. It's his company that he founded. This somehow smacks of the Governor Cuomo in New York. Remember, he was the favorite of the liberals. And then all of a sudden, oh, there's an allegation of sexual harassment. He has to go. And every establishment organization, liberal, all went. It's almost like there's some other reason. The reason could be is that they need a new face. The new face, unfortunately, is the nasty chairman, CEO, and he's pretty frightening, too. He's another one of these competent, quiet technocrats. Doesn't do a lot of media interviews, but his whole goal is, you know, he says water is not a right. You know, you'll drink nothing and you'll be happy, or you'll dehydrate. I don't know, but it's only going to get more insidious. I think the World Economic Forum is making a calculated move to change their image, to make them less visible to the public, and the replacement Nesty CEO is going to be the perfect choice for that.
Yeah, the first time I saw this story, when I read the allegations, I thought the exact same thing you just said, Mark. Yeah. I thought, well, I mean, that's the whole nonprofit world, certainly on the left-wing side and some on the right-wing side as well. You use the organization to fund your lifestyle so you can live like the rich and famous off of the backs of somebody else. That's not a scandal, so it reeks to me of something else, not that communists knifing each other in the back for power would be anything big, but that's the first thing I thought, too.
Yeah, and that's all that's happening. They're forcing him. Now, Klaus Schwab is 88 years old, but they're forcing him out. He's not happy about this. He's worried about his reputation. Now, again, Klaus Schwab, of course, is the guy that came up with the entire Great Reset agenda, the entire globalist agenda, the entire idea of, you know, you don't have companies answer to the profit margin. You're going to answer to social justice and DEI-related woke metrics. This is where the whole BlackRock and Larry Fink have been adherents to this. So I don't see the World Economic Forum changing. They're just changing leaders, and they're trying to change the image. And poor Klaus Schwab, he probably didn't see it coming. 88 years old, founded the organization, massive ego. He apparently had pleaded with his staff and I shouldn't say the word pleaded. It sounds like he's begging. He pressured his staff for decades to get him a Nobel Prize, probably a Nobel Peace Prize, because he wanted that kind of recognition. And for him to go out like this has to be crushing to his ego.
Well, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Mark, thank you, brother. Appreciate you. All right. Let's talk to a lady who survived Mao's Cultural Revolution. That'll be fascinating. Before we get to Lily, let me get to you and sleeping well. Good night's sleep can be hard to come by, right? Especially today. There's always something to stress out about. But I sleep great every night. If I think there's even a chance I'm not going to sleep well, I have a cup of hot chocolate before bed. Only my hot chocolate is special. My hot chocolate is Dream Powder from Beam. You see, my hot chocolate has all kinds of natural things in it. And these natural things just kind of relax me. Don't knock me out. I'm not half dead. Just kind of relax me. And I just fall into bed and go to sleep. And when I wake up in the morning, I don't have that normal took something to sleep hangover where you're still tired. None of that. I feel good all the time. You want to feel like that? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Go get a bag. We'll be back. We talk a lot about communism on this show. As you know, that's something I'm passionate about. I passionately want you to never have to live under it. And I tell you all the time about what's happening here, but we don't have to listen to me anymore. I think Lily probably has a lot more perspective on it than I could ever have. Joining me now, Lily Tang Williams. She's running for Congress in New Hampshire, and I hope she wins. And she's a survivor of Mao's Cultural Revolution, which you already know about because you watched this show. Lily, I did not live through it. I only have books. You did. Tell me about it.
Well, thank you for having me on, Jesse. Nice to meet you here. I follow you.
Me too.
And I've been telling my story for past, I will say, 8 years. And the country got worse and worse. So I just feel like I'm answer my calling to run for office. So I have a big mic in front of me to tell my stories, to warn American citizens we were going down the wrong path. And that it's my duty to come out. And because of I speak the truth, I get on CCP's blacklist. I have not been able to go to China, visit my family for 10 years. But that's the personal sacrifice I'm willing to make in order to save America.
Lily, the floor is yours. Tell us your background, your story. Start in China. Give it to you.
Well, I was born 2 years before Mao started his Cultural Revolution. When he died, I was 12 years old. And I was born into poverty. My mom and dad were poor, working class, and illiterate, and I did not know the truth. So I was totally brainwashed as a child. I was Mao's young pioneer, Red Guard. And when he died, I was just totally lost and depressed. And at 12 years old, I did not know what to believe because we were chanting, "Long live Chiang Mai Mao, 10,000 years, double 10,000 years. He's going to live 1 million years." And that's when I first started to ask questions in my head. Who lied to me? Who lied to my entire generation and entire my parents' generation? But of course, I had to ask that question privately in my own head. I knew it was not politically correct to ask publicly. And, so I decided I'm going to search for truth and go to best university possible. After this, restarted college in 1977. I studied very hard for nonstop, like 3 years, in order to pass the nationalized college entrance exam to go to study law for college degree in Shanghai from Sichuan province, so southwest of China. And my life changed in college.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it changed and I'm glad you are here now. Now let's shift gears and talk about modern day China. Scott Bessent went on the news and he talked about the tariffs and what they're going to do to China. Here he was.
Over time, we will see that the Chinese tariffs are unsustainable for China. I've seen some very large numbers over the past few days to show if these numbers stay on, Chinese could lose 10 million jobs very quickly. And even if there is a drop in the tariffs, that they could lose 5 million jobs. So remember that we are the deficit country. They sell almost 5 times more goods to us than we sell to them. So the onus will be on them to take off these tariffs. They're unsustainable for them.
Lily, what are these tariffs going to do to China?
Well, China economy is very weak even before tariff war started. And because of their very restricted, inhuman COVID lockdown for past, like from 2020 all the way to 2022, that lots of business closed down. And Xi Jinping also has been taking China backwards. And from the old economic reforms under Deng Xiaoping, even Jiang Zemin, all the way to more and more state control. And so he actually caused the economic downturn in China and even population going decline too. And he wants to play hardball, fight to the end, and trying to get other aging countries to be on his side. It's not working. We have more cards to play as the new administration is saying. Also, this is bigger than just a trade war. This is about, China stop to be the global bullies, and they have to play by the rules. They entered the WTO a long time ago, but they never keep their promises. They never open up their market to the foreign countries' access, and their tariffs were not reciprocal. and they don't provide intellectual property protections and legal protections inside of China for U.S. businesses. So this is about more than trade war. This is about reshape the new global trade. In some ways, we talk about world order in the past. But what is the new world order, with China being the leader or United States for the American first to be the global leader? So this is a choice now at a historical moment. Do we choose China, who wants to become number one to dominate the world, or we are choosing United States because we are a constitutional republic, a free country, and China is a totalitarian one-party control and state?
Lily, what do you make of these stories about their military purges going on? I've had sources tell me for a while that Mao is actually afraid of his military. What do you make of this?
Well, that People's Republic of China does not have, independent military. It's party control the guns. And Xi Jinping holds three positions: military commission chairman, and Communist Party chairman, and the president. None of those positions are elected by the people. So basically is a dictator for life. But because he's power grab and the hardline economical policies and so-called anti-corruption campaigns, he made lots of political enemies. So military generals come and go, and defense foreign minister come and go. His power is vulnerable right now. Wait until Chinese people know the truth about China and go to take a massive protest like they did 2022 and calling for done with Xi Jinping and CCP, then his power will be really vulnerable. So I think that we have more cards to play. We need to project strength. President Trump is a strong leader and demands respect, even though China might say whatever they want. But I think behind the doors, they want to negotiate. They will come to the table. So this is the best time for us to negotiate, not just on the tariffs, but also on other things, like level the playing field and protect the market access they promised after entering WTO, and stop human rights abuses. There are so many things can be on the table for us to negotiate. I hope I can be part of that to help.
Yeah, I hope you can too. I really hope you get to Congress. Lily, I respect you a lot. I applaud you for getting involved. We'll talk to you soon. All right. Light in the moon. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And on my life, I wake up yesterday morning and I see this video on my phone. It was on social media. And I thought, when I first saw it and I pressed play on the video, I thought it was a Saturday Night Live skit, some sort of skit. I thought somebody was doing a bit. But this guy, was it Sri Thanadar? I don't know how to say his name. He was born in India, moved here. Now, of course, he's a congressman in Michigan trying to impeach Trump. So go figure, dual citizen. He sat down and made a very formal announcement about his intentions. And this is real. This is an elected member of Congress. He votes in our Congress.
This is Congressman Sri Thanadar. Donald Trump has already done real damage to our democracy. But defying a unanimous 9-0 Supreme Court ruling, that has to be the final straw. It's time we impeach Donald J. Trump. This isn't an isolated incident. It's part of a dangerous, deliberate pattern. That's why today I introduced a resolution to impeach Donald J. Trump, outlining 7 articles of impeachment. I won't be silent, and I'm calling on all my colleagues, Democrats, Republicans, and independents, to stand up with me. Enough is enough. Donald J. Trump must be impeached.
All right, look, there's a lot I could say. I'm just going to say this, though. Fellas, look at my hair. You remember it wasn't long ago on I'm Right when I had a pretty full head of hair. Now it's gone. That's because it started to thin out. I know you could see it. It's the hairline, it started to retreat. You see how far back it is? And so I did what men do. I just buzzed it down and let it go. That's one route. He chose a different route. But everyone can tell. Guys, if you're considering the toupee, don't. And I know you found a good guy, right? You know, my brother's cousin does them really well. Nobody can tell. Everybody can tell. Everyone knows. And it doesn't look good. Just let it go. I'll see you tomorrow.